Hi, everyone, and welcome to this summer mini episode of Dogs Unknown. I'm your host, Sarah Frazier, joined by fellow host Brian Burton. And we are talking today about, I'm really excited for us to have this conversation. We're talking about puppies. And just hearing the word puppy, I'm going to bet that maybe a smile came across your face and you felt lots of like lovely, warm, fun, fuzzy feelings, as you should. Because when we think about puppies, we usually do get the warm fuzzies. And we think about puppy kisses and snuggles and all the wonderful things that puppies bring that are very real. But today we're talking about the puppy blues, which is something that, you know, while puppies are amazing and they can bring a whole lot of joy, they're also a ton of work and they can bring a ton of stress and anxiety. And the reality of puppy ownership, as it really happens, doesn't always match up with the vision that we've created in our mind or the one maybe we've been sold in movies or on social media. So the puppy blues is a term, if you haven't heard it before, because lots of folks haven't, that's used to refer to feelings of just like, it can be sadness or anxiety or regret or other negative types of emotions like overwhelm that you experience in the days or the weeks or the months after welcoming a new puppy into your home. If you've experienced the puppy blues, you're not alone. If this is your first time hearing about it and you're like, oh, thank goodness, this is a thing. Like, it wasn't just me. You are not alone. It's experienced by a whole lot of people. And we are joined today by one of those individuals who's going to share a little bit about her experience. And that's Hannah, who is a client at Instinct Hudson Valley, who has very generously agreed to share her experience with her new puppy Dolly today. So thank you so much, Hannah, for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. And also thank you for making the, we put a call out for summer mini episode topics in our client Facebook group. And you suggested this one and then, yeah, so generously agreed to come on. So really, really appreciate it. Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about your puppy Dolly, just how you came to be her human?
Yeah.
And then the emotions that you kind of experienced after bringing her home.
Yeah. So I kind of always knew that I wanted to be a puppy parent, and I grew up with dogs. They were always in our family, and my close-knit family, we had two dogs that we got when I was in like high school. So sort of felt like I kind of knew what I was getting into. And I moved into an apartment on my own for the first time a couple of years ago. And once I finally felt a little bit more settled, I was like, I think now's the time. And so I started looking in January. I knew that I had some requirements based on the building I was in, so I had to be a little bit careful. I couldn't just go to the shelter, unfortunately. So I spoke with, family members, just sort of getting a sense for like, what kind of dogs feel big, but don't get too big. And my cousin introduced me to the breed, the Sussex Spaniel, and I started looking into that. And I was sort of told that it might be a long search because there aren't too many puppies born each year. And I was like, you know, that's okay. I could use sort of a long runway. And then in February, I found out that one little girl was available. And I was like, you know, this is one of those times where if you don't take the opportunity, it might not come around again. So I'm going to do it. And then I had about 4 weeks of just like really kind of intense getting ready to, you know, have her come and join my home. And there was a lot of like excitement and just like preparing and, initial like stress, like, oh my gosh, what's it going to be like? But I'm really setting this up. I think I'm going to have a lot of success. I'm excited. And then she came and it was wonderful. And my whole life changed. And I think I knew that was going to happen, but it was kind of a shock.
Yeah, I love that. I love the story of, like researching the breed. And I also just want to call out as we move forward, never feel like you should apologize for researching and getting a puppy from a breeder.
No, absolutely.
You know,
not.
That's a great responsible choice to make, as is going to a shelter and assessing dogs by different temperaments. So I just want to say that, you know, don't ever feel like you need to apologize for that, at least not in this space. And the Sussex Spaniel, yeah, like they're pretty rare. I feel like we've only worked with maybe one or two over the years.
Yeah,
and
not many,
you know, out of thousands of dogs. So that's a really cool choice. I mean, they're beautiful. And yeah, yes. And I think the sort of lots of dog in a smaller body is probably a really good description, like lots of spaniels, like energetic mm-hmm. and, you know, ready to do stuff. I'm curious, like, cause I know you said you brought her home and, you know, obviously fell in love and things were wonderful. Yeah. And I know you said your whole life changed. When did that reality, I guess, sort of start to set in of like, oh shoot, this is a big change.
Yeah. So I took a couple of days off of work just because I knew that it was going to be a big sort of shift and I needed to figure out how I was going to do both. I work from home, luckily with a puppy. And I think on the third day I went back for half days and starting to realize that I was going to have to juggle like my human responsibilities with my dog responsibilities was not something I didn't expect, but kind of experiencing it was overwhelming. And I would say by like the fourth day of her being home, I was on the phone with, you know, it was actually a trainer who is a little bit too far outside of my like home radius. And but she came recommended from my vet. And so I was on the phone with her and I was just suffering to this poor woman I've never met before. And she actually helped me find Instinct because it was closer to where I am. And she was like, let's get you some help. I think you need it. And I was like, I think they do too. So yeah. It was pretty quick. It was, you know, the first couple of days were all like exciting. You know, it's okay. We're having accidents and we're getting to know one another. And then like the rest of life came back in. And I was like, I don't know how I'm supposed to do this. And that's when I think it got like, just kind of over, like really overwhelming. And I really didn't know kind of what to do to make myself kind of feel like I could do it.
Yeah. If you had to sort of, I think it's so what's coming across for me in terms of the big major feeling there mm-hmm. was just overwhelmed. Like how mm-hmm. am I going to fit all these pieces together? Any yeah. one of them in isolation is okay, right? Mm-hmm. Like if Dolly was your focus.
The only thing. Yep.
Yeah. Or you know, or your human, yeah. your other human responsibilities, like, okay, but putting them all together, overwhelm. Mm-hmm. Was there any other, like, did you feel, and you share whatever you're comfortable with, there's yeah. no reason for this, but I'm just curious, like, I know some of the other kind of emotions that can come in are things like, truthfully, just kind of regretting, like, why did I do this?
Yeah.
Or should I
yeah.
have done, or questioning, like, should I have done this? But was that something that you felt?
Yeah, I was really ashamed about it. I felt like, I kept looking at her. She was like this cute, tiny little brown puppy. And I was like, who let you in my house? Like, what are you doing here? You have no manners. I don't really know how to communicate with you yet. We don't know each other. And like, you're just allowed to be here because at one point I said you could. And I just kept looking at her being like, what are you doing here? And I think maybe the best way for me to sort of like put into words, and I remember saying this to my dad, I was so ashamed of this. I just kept saying, I can absolutely imagine my life without her. And he was like, she's been there for 5 days. So yeah, you've had years without her. And I was like, I know, but I feel so badly that if someone were to be like, oh, could you even imagine? I'd be like, yeah, totally.
Yeah. Again.
And now, you know, 3.5 months later, I feel much more like I couldn't imagine it without her. But in those early days, I was like, if she went away, I would be sad, but it would be back to the way it used to be.
Right.
Yeah.
And I mean, I love that you shared that and you said it beautifully. And I think it just highlights so much, like so many of us have such, because we're sold them or told that we should have them. We have such unrealistic expectations about how quickly we should form this like incredibly deep and lasting connection and bond with every dog who kind mm-hmm. of crosses our paths. You know, when really it's like, well, I'm just getting to know you. And like your dad really wisely said, you know, your whole life had been
yeah.
without Dolly up until that point. Mm-hmm. And she was still brand new. It doesn't even like, doesn't mean you're wishing her harm. It doesn't mean you don't want her to have the best life in the whole wide world.
Yeah.
But yeah. she's new and you're still getting to know each other. So yeah. I love that you shared that because I'm sure that will resonate with a lot of people listening.
Yeah. I think the other thing too with that is, I think it's sometimes hard for people to sort of understand before they actually get a puppy, because like seeing a puppy on the street or seeing a puppy on Instagram, I mean, like they're so stinking cute, right? Like that's a big reason I think why a lot of people get puppies. Like they're just so cute and they look so lovable.
But and they are lovable.
They are. Yeah. But at the same time, it's still like the actually living with a puppy is very different than mm-hmm. seeing them on the street or seeing them on Instagram or even having a friend that you go and visit and you get to like hang out with their puppy. And that sort of day to day can be a little bit rough with like you're getting used to new habits. They're getting used to you. And I think and sort of like that key thing there is I think that expectation that you're going to like fall in love or have this you know, really deep relationship, like you said, Sarah, right away, is not really a realistic expectation. Mm-hmm. There are some times where I think that sort of does happen, and it's mm-hmm. just sort of like a perfect match and things just line up. And it's, I think, a little bit easier for people to settle in. But I think most of the time that relationship builds over time. And I think that's mm-hmm. like a really important point for people, not to put that pressure on themselves, not to put that pressure on the puppy either, because they also don't know you, mm-hmm. at, you know, at the same time. So I'm really glad you brought that up, because if people can hear that and hear that, like, it's okay if you don't have that, like, it's not like if you're not best friends right away, mm-hmm. like that's probably more normal than not.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. I think that's absolutely true. So yeah, I love, love, love that you shared that, Hannah. I think that's just so valuable for people to hear.
Mm-hmm. It was hard, but you know, with time, and that's what everyone kept telling me, that it takes time. And you're like, that's the one thing I have no control over. Mm-hmm. Like, and that was a really hard thing to sort of come to terms with, was that something I had absolutely no way to speed up or slow down was what was going to probably in the end make everything feel a lot better.
Yeah. And also the reality is that even if it takes time, your responsibilities and what you need to get done every day is what it is in the moment. So it's like, well, how do I figure that out while time is passing? And, you know, and I'm figuring this out with Dolly at the same time. And it draws a lot of parallels for me. I mean, I know they're not the same thing and there are differences, but like, you know, we had our human puppy in January, and we know it'd be a huge change and things would be so different. But there's also these visions you have in your head, right? Like, I'll work while the baby's napping. And Sylvie's like, you need to hold me so I nap, right? And it's like, okay, well, I still have things to do. So how do we manage to get this done? And it's just a lot to figure out. And mm-hmm. even if, again, cognitively, you know, like in time, this will change, like Sylvie's not probably going to be a teenager asking me to rock her to sleep. And that's that's okay. Your reality is the now. And how do we deal with the now? Yeah. So I'm just curious. I know as we backtrack a little bit, this idea of the puppy blues, like, was this something you'd ever heard of or were familiar with before you got Dolly?
I've heard of them. And like, I think what was most surprising to me was that everyone that I kind of turned to just like lament and like talk to about this was like, yeah, he felt the same way. And it shocked me, because they never told me they were feeling that way when they had puppies. I never heard that they were having a hard time and that they cried every day the same way I did. And, mm-hmm. you know, it was sort of, it was like this universal experience that no one knew we were all having. And like, it was sort of, I think that's what surprised me the most, is that I never went to a friend of mine who had a puppy and they were like, no, what are you talking about? It was always like, yeah, we cried for 3 weeks. It's like, okay, same.
Yeah. But like, how many people are kind of talking about it in the moment, or understandably, right, like posting that on Instagram, or, you know, like, it's just, oh, you got a new puppy. That's so exciting. Congratulations is sort of the message that we give. And people are like, yeah, it's great. Thanks.
It's great. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I passed a woman in the hall here at the apartment one day and she's like, how are you doing? And, you know, we're not like super close, but I was like, I'm good. And then we sort of kept walking. I was like, you know, no, I'm not okay. Like, the puppy's kind of hard. And she's like, really? And I was like, I think that's the first time like I said it to someone. And I was like, you know, I'm not doing great. Don't get a dog. And she was like, what do you mean? And I was like, I'm just so overwhelmed. And, you know, it was nice to like talk to someone, but I think that was like the first time I like was honest about it.
Yeah.
And then the floodgates like opened, and anyone who would listen, I was like, dead.
But it takes a lot of courage to say that, right?
Yeah,
because people are just expecting the stock, like, oh, it's amazing. They're so cute and lovely and wonderful. And it's just, it takes courage to say that. And I love that you did. And I hope, and the more people that did, I think, again, the more people would realize like, oh, other people feel this way too. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's just because you're also feeling stressed and overwhelmed doesn't mean you're also probably starting to build a bond with the puppy and like having these positive experiences with them too, where they like make you laugh 7 times a day out loud, like belly laugh at how ridiculous they are. But then there's other times where it's really, really hard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think the other thing too is like, I know it's like, Sarah, we've probably done hundreds of puppy raising camps where puppies come and live with us for a couple of weeks, and we get them, you know, started on house training and different things. And sometimes I think it's easy as a professional to lose sight of the fact that like you have this experience, like, you know, like what's a phase, what is stuff that you just kind of have to get through versus stuff, because I think where sometimes owners also get overwhelmed with that is like not knowing what's a phase and not knowing what's an actual something that needs to be actually addressed. And I think that causes a lot of anxiety, a lot of fear for people.
Yeah.
And I will say, like, you know, just talking about our human puppy, like I, that for me, like I kept having flashbacks to almost like puppy clients that we've had, because for us, that was like a brand new experience. It's a different species, but there's like developmental stuff going on. And it's like, you can read all the stuff that you want, but until you're actually in it, it feels very different. And you don't know what's a phase, what's actually a problem, not a problem, but something that might need a little bit more attention. And I do notice that it's like sort of a theme. And I, and since having Sylvie, I find I'm much more aware of that. I think with my clients is making sure to clarify, hey, like this is a phase, or this is something we might need to actually start looking at or addressing. So, so I think the reason why I bring that up is for anyone listening, and if you're working with a trainer or behavior consultant and you see certain things, like ask the question sometimes like, hey, is this more like a phase or a developmental thing that we just kind of have to get through and manage versus is this something that I should be paying attention to now and spending time on trying to address it? So, so that, yeah, that part of the conversation there reminded me of that.
Yeah. Well, I think that does lead us into, and I would love to hear your reaction or thoughts on this, Hannah, like sort of those common reasons why we might feel that way. And I think, Brian, you just highlighted a huge one, is just knowing, like, is this something that I need to be super concerned? It can be stressful either way, right? Like you may feel stressed, even if it's a normal developmental phase, but that anxiety or uncertainty of knowing, like, is this something she's just going to kind of grow out of, you know, with reasonably appropriate care, or is it something that I need to like take action on or be really worried about? But I think some of the other, even just more practical ones is like, puppies take away your sleep, right? Like puppies change your schedule, you lose flexibility, and like you, and that impacts so many things. But then yes, the sort of lack of understanding or information about what's just developmentally normal versus what's maybe cause for, you know, concern or action. I think the sort of the like unmet expectations of like, again, the picture you had built in your head of what this experience would be like versus when reality comes crashing down and it's just different. And then I think another huge one, maybe you can speak on this, Hannah, I mean, about all any of these reasons, but is that I think one of the huge ones that I didn't recognize in our clients early on that is so prevalent, it makes a ton of sense. And again, with Sylvie, like we do the same thing with our human child, is the amount of pressure and sort of worry you put on yourself that you might like somehow mess up your puppy, right? Or do things that are going to significantly negatively impact them long-term. And you're gonna be like, I'm doing something that's going to mess them up. So do any of those reasons kind of come to the forefront for you as like big factors in what you were feeling, Hannah?
I think, you know, a lot of all of it, I would say, you know, early on, my mom kept saying to me, she's like, what do you expect from her? Like, she's a puppy. And I was like, and she was like, she's a baby. She doesn't know anything yet. And I was like, I don't know what I expect, really. I want her to grow up to be, you know, well-mannered. And I want to, you know, have a decent amount of like trust in my ability to sort of control her out in the world. And you know, that she'll act kind of in a way that doesn't infringe on everyone else around her. And I just don't know how to help her get there. And my mom kept saying, she's like, okay, but she's like 2 months old. You have to give her a minute. Like she doesn't, you know, she literally couldn't do that if you wanted her to right now. Mm-hmm. She's too young. So there was a lot of that, like what I knew I wanted to achieve in the future and not knowing how to get there and being so afraid I wasn't going to be able to achieve it. I think not knowing what's a phase was a huge one. Dolly has, I'll say has because I don't expect it to be completely gone, but so like some resource guarding a tendencies, and that was huge for me. I was so disappointed when we kind of uncovered it because it felt so big. I never experienced that with any other dogs. And, you know, it kind of lends itself to potential situations where they're kind of, you know, could be dangerous. And, you know, I did a lot of work with Megan at Hudson Valley and homeschool trainer Kristen. And it was so hard because you hear this like antiquated, like thought that you should be able to walk up to your dog's bowl, put your hand in and they don't care. Like, and everyone's like, you need to be testing that out and seeing if you can do it. And like, she just couldn't do it. It like stressed her out, stressed me out that she wouldn't let me do it, made me upset that I couldn't do it because everyone was telling me I should be able to. And so like having to sort of reframe meal times and treats and sort of make myself relax and give her the space to kind of grow and learn. I mean, now she hasn't had any, I mean, even Megan has said, like, I haven't seen any of it. And I'm like, me neither. I'm still trying to be like really respectful of her with her stuff. But like, I think part of it was she just needed to grow up a little bit and I needed to stop pushing her like beyond her threshold. That was a big one for me. Like not pushing her too fast, I think.
Yeah.
And being so, and like, just, I wish we could go faster.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's really hard to ignore those pressures from like just those societal pressures and like outside pressures too, yep. To be like, Hannah, what are you doing? Like, you need to be able to stick your hand in the dog's bowl. Yeah. You know, it's hard to ignore that stuff. And it's a narrative in our own head too, because we've heard it for so long. And it's not even truthfully that it's an unreasonable thing to say, like, we come up with some scenario where we're like, well, what if I drop something dangerous in the bowl and I need able to take it out? Like, yeah, it's not a silly concern to have. Mm-hmm. We're just going to try to get there a different way. And it's amazing that you've done that where you're like, look, I'm going to build trust. I'm going to make her feel safe and comfortable and relaxed so that if something does come up down the road, there's probably a pretty good chance that I've built enough goodwill in her mind that like mom is safe. Mm-hmm. You know, she listens to me, like she's going to let it go.
Yeah.
You know, if push comes to shove and you like, you need to step in and do something you wouldn't normally do because there's like a dangerous situation. So I know it's a little off topic from the podcast, but like from the topic of today's episode, but it's just such an important lesson. And I think it's amazing that you've already internalized and learned that and said, and it's still really stinking hard to do it.
Yeah.
Right. Like,
and I think what you were saying with the goodwill is that kind of goes back to your question about whether or not like I, you know, was worried about messing up 100%. And there were a couple times where we talked about sleep deprivation and things like that. There were stretches where we were up multiple times a night and like I understood it, but I was so tired and I had to work. And there were a few times where, like, again, I'm sad and kind of ashamed to say it. Like I've snapped, I've yelled at her and I have, you know, not always been like super soft and I don't like that, but I look back and they always correlate with when I'm like overworked or underslept. And one of the things that Megan had said to me, she was like, you know, you have to get it right like 40% of the time. She trusts you. You've met her needs every other time. And like that was hard to internalize because I felt like I had so much to make up for after I would like yell at her. And I don't think she felt that way, but I did.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, and I mean, I would say you're human, but also like you're just a living being, you know, and sleep deprivation has very real impacts. And so does like stress and work. And it, you know, none of us are ever going to be perfect. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's that point of like, sometimes you're going to raise your voice and sometimes you're going to like, you know, just conduct yourself in a way that you're like, oh, I wish I had done that differently, but I didn't. So how do I move forward? You know? And I think the nice thing again, to your trainer Megan's point and for you, Hannah, with what you've learned is if the intent is there to do the best you can, like I feel like a lot of dogs, especially over time, like that's going to be the default is like,
yeah,
my mom's like looking out for me and cares that I do the right thing. And she, you know, that's what's going to come through. Cause we've all, I mean, we yell at our dogs sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, you know,
and it's a whisper, it likes people can't hear it somehow, but you know, it's just, it happens. Like, yeah. It happens.
Yeah. But I think the thing is like, if that's just sort of more, you know, what happens at certain times, it's not really part of your training routine or how exactly. Like you're trying to address stuff, then
it's not your go-to method of how you're going to try to deal with things.
Right. And I did want to add a couple of things. Cause one is like with that, just with the sticking the hand in the food bowl and just the pressure that people feel about being able to do that. But like really just thinking about like, just like, I always just think like, just like imagine someone coming over and sticking their hand in your food at a restaurant. Like, I think almost every one of us would like not be a very happy person. So again, some dogs just happily defer and do that. There's other dogs who are like, I'm eating my food right now. And we also don't know, like, maybe there was some competition over food when they were younger, or there's a whole bunch of different reasons, because people, they tend to put that blame back on themselves, that there's something about me, why my dog is actually doing this, or like they're broken, or like there's something wrong with them. And like that sort of growling, snapping, like that is a normal behavior, and we want to work on it and make it better. But like, I think it's one of those behaviors that you can work through. And that's a whole like less is actually more type of thing, where like give them the space, build that trust, and sort of getting there. So I'm glad that you really did that, because you are right. That's not an easy thing to do. And the second thing I did want to add, sleep deprivation with puppy owners is a really, really big thing. And I've seen that make some owners just so stressed and not really able to enjoy the puppy phase. Mm-hmm. And getting back to like the social pressure, there's a lot of times people are saying like, don't use wee-wee pads, because you're either going to mess up the training or they're never going to go outside. And honestly, all of that is mostly bull. Mm-hmm. Or
don't put the crate in their room, because you'll never be able to get them out of it. So like put them in another space so that, you know, they have to learn to be by themselves.
Right.
Day one.
Yep. So I did want to say because I think one of the things for anyone listening, if you are struggling with the overnight piece, the one thing that I have found over the last number of years that has made the biggest difference in just allowing people to relax is like that studio apartment setup that we have, and we can put a link in our,
it's a studio apartment for the puppy.
So it's like a pen with their crate in it. The crate door's open, it has their bed, and then there's a wee-wee pad on the other side. And using that, you know, in the first 4 or 5 weeks or whatever, when they're home, so that overnight they're kind of like resting in their crate, but they can come out and use the bathroom and go back to sleep. Like that has enabled so many owners to actually get the sleep that they need and enjoy that period and have more patience and doing things. Like, I really do think for me, that is just one of the biggest things that has helped so many puppy owners just get more sleep. So, because then you can take away the wee-wee pads and get them to go outside. So I think it's if anyone has been thinking about that because they need more sleep, but they're getting pressure that you're going to break your puppy because they're going on wee-wee pads. And I used to think that way back when too. It's just really not accurate at all.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But yes, the sleep is a
big one.
It's a huge one. And it's not like it's one of those things we just want to say like, well, you know, it is what it is. So just power through. And it's like, but you physically and physiologically can't. Like your brain is like, nope, I can't function right now. I've not had enough sleep. So
yeah.
I hear you on that one. So yeah, that's super helpful. I'm curious, because I know you've been doing some work with like trainers for a little while right now. I was going to ask, had you planned on getting like a trainer to work with prior to getting Lola? Did you sort of feel like most people do, especially if you've had dogs in the past, like, hey, I kind of know what I'm doing. Like it should be fine. Maybe we'll join a class at some point. But yeah. So did you plan on working with a trainer, and did the time, I think you already kind of answered this, but did the timing of that change based on what you were feeling when you first brought her home?
Yes. So I kind of assumed that she and I were just going to do our thing. We were going to take classes, you know, one of the, you know, stores, things like that around here. You're going to do that until about this time. I figured she was going to come home. She and I were going to do our thing. And I knew I had this vacation coming up, and I figured she's young right now. I don't want to, because she's still little, I don't feel kind of comfortable leaving her with a friend. So I knew I was going to look to find a board and train option, because I figured she's not with me and she's going to be boarded, she might as well get some work out of it. Mm-hmm. So I always knew around this time we were going to do some sort of board and train, but I figured that was going to be the first like really kind of intense training we were going to do. And then I just got like so overwhelmed so quickly and got in touch with like a trainer. And from kind of the outset, I would say May was a really heavy training month for us. And then it started to sort of slow down a little bit. But since we did homeschool, and she did do one week of puppy camp, so she kind of had a lot of hands-on help early on, we've done just, you know, a class at Petco to kind of keep us getting out. And I think that was nice, because homeschool was great for setting the foundation, but there are not a lot of distractions here. She's in her house, she knows what's going on. So it was nice to do something out of the house, because we're like learning the exact same stuff we already know, but with five other dogs and people mm-hmm. shopping and lizards everywhere and things like that. So I did not intend to early on do kind of really intense hands-on training, but in hindsight, I think it was the right choice for me. I don't know that like Dolly really needed to be like in training to feel like a good dog and things like that. But for me to know that I had helped her set this foundation was like changed everything.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. And she's only going to benefit from you learning and like mm-hmm. learn to feel more comfortable and confident. And, you know, so that's, it's, I think it's awesome that you did that. And what a perfect way to use a class as well. Yeah. Right? Like, yes. Let's go practice around some distractions, some things that we've already learned and that I feel pretty confident about, but mm-hmm. like we need some work out in the world. I love that.
Yeah. I do too. Because I will say, I do feel like sometimes when people come to us and they've done like one of those like big pet store training classes, they're almost a little sheepish about telling us that they
I
did
love
that.
Those classes.
We love like, because one, they're cost effective. So like they mm-hmm. are like, they're really affordable. So like a lot of people can go to them. You learn a lot of great foundation skills. They do have to make those classes work in a very distracting environment. And in fact, we've had so many really great trainers who came to work for us that actually that's where they built their foundation as a trainer. So mm-hmm. I just mm-hmm. want to throw that out there, because I know sometimes people are like, oh, am I going to get anything out of those classes or anything? I think most people do, mm-hmm. you know, so just, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah. So what is a big thing you feel like you've learned since starting training with Dolly? It can be about training, it can be about puppy development, mm-hmm. it can be about Lola. That's yeah. been like most helpful about navigating this stage. And then I'm curious too, like what still feels really challenging?
Sure. So I think I've learned to sort of take a beat and not force myself and Dolly to sort of go more quickly than we're comfortable with. I think I was so focused on like getting it all right immediately. And that put a lot of stress, I think, more on me, because I was like, we're not doing it. We're not getting there. We're not making any progress. And, you know, that was like upsetting and made me, you know, more kind of upset about our situation. So I think what I've really learned is to sort of take a beat and, you know, when it's not working, saying like, okay, like now's not the time to work on our place, or, you know, you're too amped up and we need to do something else. And I think I've also learned to just like take time and enjoy her. I was really kind of embarrassed by this a couple months ago. I realized I was like, I never just like sit on the ground and like sit with her and like pet her and play with her toys with her. And I was like, why don't I do that? And I started doing that. And I think that's really helped us too, because it's just like, that's just fun. And that's okay. Like, she's still learning when we're doing that. So I feel like I've just learned to sort of take a breath. Don't have to like master everything immediately.
Yeah.
And like, just try and let her have fun and enjoy it, because she's only this little for so long. And I already lost like a couple weeks to being so stressed out, and I don't want to lose any more. I think for what's sort of difficult still, kind of being expecting and being okay with like when things are hard, because she still has hard days, and mm-hmm. and we still, I know that that's to be expected, and she's moving into her adolescent phase, and everyone was like, oh, good luck, and I was like, you guys have barely made it out of the puppy phase, right? Like, don't tell me that. And I know that's coming, but like expecting and kind of just being okay with and being like, okay, we're gonna work through behaviors coming back or regressing with some of our training, and like just getting kind of up to speed with this kind of being,
yeah,
not always going to be like puppy hard lifelong, but we're always going to be like working.
There's so many things in there to touch on. Like, I think that lesson of like just sort of taking time to enjoy the companionship of like why you really wanted to get Dolly in the mm-hmm. first place.
Yeah.
I think is so cool. And I think that learning to kind of take a beat, which and say, do I need to reassess? Do we need to take a break? Do we need to come back to this? I mean, from a purely practical standpoint, I think is that can actually get you where you're going faster in the long run.
Yep.
But from an other standpoint, I think it's also just like giving yourself and her like some, just some more grace of like, it's okay. We don't have to do this all at once, but it's hard because I think we're rewarded for that other type of behavior in a lot of other areas of, in life, mm-hmm. right? Like power through, get it done, figure it out.
Yeah.
It just doesn't always work so great with puppies.
No.
You know, so I love those. And I think also that like what's challenging, the honesty of saying like what's challenging is having challenging days still. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think that's important to hear too, because there are going to be just like we have bad days.
Yeah.
You know, that's just a part of life. You don't have to, just because we know that's the case and that we accept it, doesn't mean we have to like it.
Right.
Right. Like it can still be stressful to have a bad day.
Yeah.
But at least we can still kind of know like it's a day. Mm-hmm. If we have multiple of these, I have support. I can reach out to say like, hey, is there something mm-hmm. we need to do here and adjust? But probably it's just an off day. So I just think there's a whole lot of lessons in what you said, Anna. I loved hearing all of that. I guess along those same lines, is there something that you found particularly helpful when it comes to like finding just maybe outside care or support that has made raising Dolly feel less stressful than it was initially? Either family, friends, you know, like, is there something that you found particularly helpful?
Yeah, I would say early on, I was a little type A, and I didn't want like just anyone being with her, because I was like, what if you don't like reinforce the good things? And what if you reinforce the bad things by accident? So early on, I wasn't really open to like leaving her with family or friends. So I think that, not to like make this a sales pitch, but I think that the homeschool was huge for me, because I knew that for an hour once a day, a few times a week, she was being cared for by someone who knew what they were doing, and I didn't have to be doing that. Mm-hmm. And she wasn't in her crate. She wasn't, you know, playing near me. She was getting interaction with someone that I like really trusted for an hour that just, it wasn't me. And then as I started to sort of ease up a little bit on this, like, you know, stress about messing her up or some other person accidentally reinforcing bad habits, which like people do. I left her with my parents one time and they're like, we taught her how to chase a towel. I was like, guys, like I have to be able to dry her off one day. Like, don't do that. I slowly was able to start like letting my parents like hang out there in the backyard while I ran to the grocery store, or, you know, have a friend come over, and I was able to like run the garbage down while she stayed in the house with her. And I think just like letting people help was also a big thing, because it's not that I wanted for help. There were so many people wanted to help, and I just needed to sort of accept it. Yeah. And that was hard too. So I would say that. And then I think the biggest thing was just learning that it was okay to put her in a crate and go out. I didn't go out for like a month. And my trainer was finally like, you have to like leave your apartment. Throw the groceries. You have to like do something for yourself. And the first few times was so stressful. But now I think we've gotten to a point where I'm like, okay, you've had like a really nice morning, and now you're going to go hang out in your crate and take a nap while I go to the grocery store. So I think both of those have really kind of changed my outlook and given me a lot more kind of leash, if you will.
Yeah. Those are great ones. And I like that. I like that point about finding a way to access help in a way that you're actually comfortable with, because mm-hmm. otherwise it's just stress the whole time, but find a way to get some amount of help, so that even if it's for you to just get used to the idea of that, like, yeah, someone else can do this. I love the, you know, I think finding a trainer, a professional that you work with or that you trust to work with can be super helpful for a bunch mm-hmm. of reasons, like helping you understand what's developmentally normal and, you know, what you have to be concerned about, and helping teach skills and learn body language and all that kind of stuff. But just that, straight up to your point, like that's someone I can trust to care, or if it's like a professional pet sitter or, you know, whatever it might be, where you can start there and say, I can relieve myself of responsibility for an hour or 2 hours or whatever, is like so huge. And I like that that was for you a stepping stone into letting other people do it as well. Mm-hmm. And then also just the use of appropriate management tools, you know, so valuable. And I think it's, you know, there's always, there are some dogs and puppies put in their crate way too much. Yep. Mm-hmm. They are. But most people have similar concerns to you, Hannah. Like, I don't want them to be in there for too long. I'm worried about them. And like, you're using it in such a wonderful way that, you know, she probably needs a nap anyway at that point. Right. Lets you recharge and go do the things that you need to do. Yeah. Because Dolly's a huge part of your life, but she's not the only thing in your life that needs to happen. So I think those are great, great, great tips for people to take away as well. They find themselves in that position.
Yeah. And so when you mentioned the type A personality piece, and because I do think one of the tough things with puppies, and especially when we, and I think, you know, I think probably across all of our locations, like people who choose to do training or trying to tackle problems, I think especially in New York, a lot of New Yorkers can be kind of type A anyways, and like really want to get things done. And I think one of the realities is like, we don't know who our puppy's going to be, and we can't force that approach onto them. And I say that as someone, you know, like we're both business owners, and, you know, for a long time, I think even with like our clients, like you're trying to get everyone to the place they want to go as quickly as possible. And like you said, Sarah, sometimes like that actually makes you get there slower. Like you actually have to take a step back. And just realizing, I think I want people, like, if you feel like progress is a little slower, and you should always feel like you're making some progress, but it, like, if, even if you feel like progress is like a like is slower, it's okay. Like it, every puppy is going to be different, and they're all going to respond to different environments differently. And it can be really hard to separate your, and I'm not implying this is how you felt, but just like in general, like sometimes it can be hard to sort of separate almost like your ego from like the progress that your puppy's actually making. And again, I'm not saying that that was you in that case, but I have seen that. And I've personally, I think, felt that, you know, with some dogs that I've trained back
in the day. And being that sort of like your capability as an owner, like you question that.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So I think it was just basically, if you do feel that way, you're not alone. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it is a skill, I think, to be able to take that step back. And it does take some practice, and it might feel a little awkward or doesn't feel supernatural at first, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Very well said. I think other things for people listening that come to mind for me in terms of like what's probably helpful if you find yourself feeling this way. So I know we talked about like finding a trainer that can help, and letting family and friends help in a way that is comfortable for you, and relying on appropriate, like age appropriate management tools. I think it's also really nice to like find a supportive community online if you can, you know, where there's not, you're not going to be met with kind of that toxic positivity, right? Where you can like share how you're really feeling and what's challenging, and know you're going to be met with kind of support and, you know, maybe suggestions, but mostly just support and empathy. I think also learning
we've seen Hannah do that for other people in our group.
Yeah. So. It's so appreciated too, like to participate in that community in a way that's like raises up other people. I think you may have touched on this a little bit in a previous answer, Hannah. I think one of the other things is actually learning to celebrate like smaller improvements and successes. So we may not be getting all the way to where we want to go, but like, look at all the little steps we've made in the last however long, you know, and really celebrating those and not feeling silly celebrating those, because they're actually a big deal, even if they feel small, you know?
Yeah.
And then I think trying not to compare yourself to, or your puppy to Instagram feeds.
Yeah.
Because you're just seeing such a small snippet of reality. And then I think, again, remembering as hard as it is that like this is a phase, and that doesn't solve or take away the stress, but knowing that it is a phase. And to your point, it's like, it is kind of a short one, you know? They're only going to be a puppy for so long. So I think the last question as we kind of wrap up today, Hannah, that I would love to ask you is, based on everything you've learned so far, what advice would you give someone who finds themselves experiencing the puppy blues, or who's maybe about to get a puppy and they're like, what do I do if that happens?
Yeah. I wish I had some like sage advice, but I think, you know, what is telling for me is that I would have another puppy. Mm-hmm. I went through it, and it was really, really hard. And in those few weeks, it felt like it was never going to end. But I think appreciating everything that your dog is going to bring into your life, and sort of getting ready for like a new sort of chapter of your life is a huge part of it. I was thinking about it yesterday. I know so many more people in my neighborhood now. I know, you know, so many other dogs in my neighborhood. I'm outside more. I'm, you know, more active. And it's all because of Dolly. Like, I guess it could have happened, but probably wasn't going to make myself go out and take all of these walks. So I think, like, knowing that there is a light at the end of the tunnel and that, like, you can build whatever kind of support system you need to kind of get through. My support system was best. I had my support from Instinct with professional trainers. I was reaching out to family and friends and anyone who would listen to me just to sort of not feel alone. Because I think one of the things I realized early on is I was like, I'm never alone. I'm very lonely because I'm doing this. I live alone. So that's partly why I think it may have felt that way. But I called people all the time because I was like, I just don't want to be alone with her by myself. And I think, you know, just talking about it helped. Like, there were days when I tried not to, like, I felt like burden people with how I was feeling. And those days were worse because I was holding it in. So, you know, like you said, finding communities like online too really helped. So I would say trying not to do it all on your own and holding it in would be like the biggest piece of advice, because that's when I had my worst days.
Yeah. Yep. I think that's fantastic advice for people.
Yeah.
Like, really, really impactful.
That's great.
Any final thoughts from you, Brian, before we knock out? Hannah, thank you so much for joining us today. I do think the puppy blues, while it's something that's gotten a little bit more awareness in the last while, is still something that's not talked about enough. And I think discussing them a little bit more openly and acknowledging that they're a super normal part of puppy ownership is so helpful and important. So I think for people listening, whether you're planning to get a puppy, whether you've just gotten a puppy, or maybe if you know someone who has recently gotten a puppy, it might inspire you to reach out and offer to puppy sit or hang out with them for an afternoon, or just let them know, like, hey, give me a call if you're having a hard time. So that's everything for today. Thank you for listening, everyone. We'll see you next time.
See you next time.